Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
To prepare for this debate, I rode in the bumper cars at the state fair.
Good morning. I'm Beth Fertig sitting in for Brian Lehr. And that was Senator Barack Obama's big laugh line from early in yesterday's Democratic presidential debate from Iowa. The debate aired as a special edition of ABC's This Week with George Stephanopoulos. And joining me to discuss how bumpy a ride it was for Senator Obama and the other candidates is Rick Klein, senior political reporter at ABC News and author of The Note. Welcome back to the show, Rick.
Hi there.
Hi. So the first question of the debate is, which is more important to voters, experience or change? And we're going to hear three excerpts from the debate on that first question. We're going to hear John Edwards, Christopher Dodd, and finally Bill Richardson. So let's listen and then we'll talk about it.
I think we were out of power in the Congress for 13 years. In November of 2006, the Democrats took over the Congress again. I think there was a reason for that, because the Democrats in November of 2006 stood for change. America wants change in the most serious way. And if we become the party of status quo in 2008, that's a loser.
The experience, the background, the demonstrated success in dealing with both domestic and foreign policy issues are critical questions. You're not going to have time in January of 2009 to get ready for this job. You've got to be ready immediately for it.
You know, I think that Senator Obama does represent change. Senator Clinton has experience. Change and experience. With me, you get both.
Okay, Rick Klein from ABC. That was Bill Richardson acknowledging that so many see this as a contest between the two leading contenders, Barack Obama representing change and Hillary Clinton with the experience. But Richardson was trying to split the difference, and former Senator John Edwards seems to be trying to put himself in the Obama mode there, doesn't he, by representing the change element.
He does, and I think Edwards actually represents an interesting challenge to Obama because he's really taking a lot of his message. Now, the Obama folks will, or the Edwards people will say that Obama is the one that's taking Edwards' message. But of course, when you look at the polls and you see Obama in second place, it looks like Edwards is the one who's sort of glomming onto that. But it is interesting. I mean, and I think this was my take on this debate was that we saw some of the lower half of the first tier candidates, people other than Hillary Clinton, defining their candidacies, making a name for themselves. I think John Edwards, Barack Obama, Bill Richardson can all claim that this was their best debate performance, and I think Hillary Clinton, this may have been her weakest performance, and it's not because she did anything bad, that there was any sort of knockout punch or big gaffe or anything that was really embarrassing, but just that we became used to seeing her rise above the field, and this is the first time that other folks seemed to be at her level.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that had something to do with the way the debate was structured?
I think it has something to do with the hour of the day.
Eight in the morning in Iowa?
Yeah, I think it has something to do with the location, the fact that this was in Iowa, and the fact that it was on broadcast television, I think, changes a little bit how some of the candidates approach it. I also think it's just the point that we're at now in the campaign. We've gotten away from some of the tentativeness that marked the early exchanges, and I think the candidates sense the urgency of making names for themselves and establishing exactly who they are in this field, but they're not ready for the all-out attacks. We didn't see a lot of bomb throwing other than from really Dennis Kucinich and Mike Gravel, who don't have any realistic chance of being elected. We didn't see John Edwards really as aggressive even as I thought he'd be. I actually spent a few days on the trail with him last week, and I thought he was a lot more aggressive and critical of Obama and Clinton than he was actually on the debate stage yesterday morning.
Well, what we are seeing, though, is this theme of experience versus change, which they're all sort of taking sides in this debate question. And I want to get back to that because it was the first question of the debate, really. And Senators Dodd and Biden are lining up on the experience side. Is there any indication of how voters are leaning or trying to decide? Do you know which one matters to the most, the change versus the experience?
If you ask voters, and I don't know the poll that will say that particularly, I think change probably edges out experience slightly. People are really upset about two terms of George W. Bush. A lot of Democrats anyway are upset about it and do want to have a drastically new direction. But they do rate experience pretty high, so I don't think it's a clear winner one way or the other. I think when you ask voters, though, who they consider to be the candidate of change, They'll say Barack Obama much more likely than they'll say Hillary Clinton. You ask about the candidate of experience, it's going to be Hillary Clinton. So yes, that is a key distinction. And I'd throw in another factor into this that bubbled up at the debate and has come up on the campaign trail, and that's electability and whether Hillary Clinton is too divisive, too polarizing a figure to win the election, to help other Democrats. That's an argument that we're hearing Barack Obama and John Edwards make and say, we don't need, and Barack Obama says, we don't just need any Democrat. We'd love to have a Democrat, and any Democrat would be better than George Bush, but we don't need just any Democrat. We need a Democrat who's going to change the way Washington works, because there's been this political paralysis that really stretches back through the Clinton years.
Right, and let's hear a bit of that, because here's Barack Obama trying to show that experience isn't all it's cracked up to be.
Earlier on, we were talking about the issue of experience. Nobody had more experience than Donald Rumsfeld and Dick Cheney, and many of the people on this stage that authorized this war.
So while ABC was airing that debate, Karl Rove was visiting all the other Sunday shows and even made a brief appearance in the debate via tape from an appearance last week on Rush Limbaugh's radio show. And he was talking about the experience voters have with Clinton. So let's hear a little bit of that. This is Karl Rove bashing Hillary Clinton on whether she has too much experience.
There is no front runner who has entered the primary season with negatives as high as she has in the history of modern polling. She's going into the general election with, depending on what poll you look at, in the high 40s on the negative side and just below that on the positive side. And there's nobody who's ever won the presidency who started out in that kind of position.
Okay, so that was Karl Rove on whether Hillary Clinton is too much of an issue. I'm Beth Ferdig, filling in for Brian Lehr, who's on vacation this morning, and we're discussing yesterday's Democratic presidential debate with Rick Klein of ABC News. So, Rick, what do you make of that?
Well, I think Karl Rove's motives are always very complex, and I think there's a couple of things going on. Karl Rove knows that the way to excite the Republican base is to scare, and Rush Limbaugh knows the same thing, is to scare up the prospect of Hillary Clinton presidency. Nothing will help Republican fundraising more and get Republicans out to the polls more than the prospect of Hillary Clinton becoming president. He's also, though, generally right in his analysis. I mean, she does have very high negatives, and that's a difficult thing to overcome. She comes into the race with almost half the country having a negative perception of her. And that, you know, pollsters will tell you, analysts and political scientists will tell you, that's a hard thing to shake, that once people have made up their mind that they don't like you, that they view you negatively, it's extremely difficult to convince them in the other direction. It's a lot easier to go from the positive or the unknown to the negative than it is in the other direction. And that's really a central argument that Barack Obama and John Edwards are making. And they're not going to quote Karl Rove because that's not a popular thing to do, but they will say, as John Edwards has said many times, look, if you're a Democrat running for office in Georgia or Iowa or any red state in this country, who would you rather have at the top of the ticket? Would you rather have Hillary Clinton, who's such a polarizing figure and is viewed negatively by so many people, or would you rather have a John Edwards? And Barack Obama says similar things. So it is an interesting thing, and it, of course, when Karl Rove weighs in, you know, you don't take it just at face value. He doesn't want to see Hillary Clinton become president, so his predictions that she's going to win the nomination, you have to read a little bit beyond that and realize what's really going on and what he's trying to convey with that. But he's right on the basics, that her negatives are a big, big drag on whether she can actually win the election.
Well, Hillary Clinton had an interesting response to that. Let's hear.
Well, I don't think Karl Rove's going to endorse me. That becomes more and more obvious, but I find it interesting he's so obsessed with me. And I think the reason is because we know how to win. I mean, you know, I have been fighting against these people for longer than anybody else up here. I've taken them on, and we've beaten them.
So does she make a good point that, in her case, any Democrat is going to be attacked by what she calls, you know, the Republican machine, and that she has the experience to stand up to the Republicans, and therefore she'd be the toughest and best candidate for the Democrats?
Well, I don't know that just having been there necessarily gives you the experience, but she's right that anyone that's in the spotlight for an extended period of time has those kind of negatives. I mean, I think Ted Kennedy's negatives are probably higher, and he's been out there longer, so on one level you can make that argument. But I also think it glosses over a more delicate issue that the Clintons face generally, and that people have a very complex relationship with the Clinton family, the Clinton years. A lot of Democrats have a complex relationship. They have fond memories of a two-term president, a two-term Democratic president, the first one since FDR. But they also remember the scandals. They remember the endless probes and inquiries and Monica Gate and all the craziness that surrounded it, and that is part of the baggage that Hillary Clinton brings to the race. And so it's a difficult thing to really quantify. But Democrats don't just have good feelings about the Clinton years. That's, you know, one of the reasons Al Gore didn't win, is because the nation had a complex relationship with the Clintons and a complex feeling toward it. So one of the arguments that she makes on the trail is, you know, the 90s weren't so bad, let's go back to them. And certainly with the economy, with relative peace and prosperity, it's an easy case to make, but I don't think that that's enough. I don't think that people are going to want to go backwards and revisit all of the various dramas of the Clinton years. And that, I think, is that's something she hasn't addressed, and she doesn't address when she just says, well, you know, they attack me because I'm out there fighting for them. In part, she's right, but it's more than that.
Right, because there were so many different lines of attack that could come back to revisit her, you think.
Yes. Yeah, and some of it, again, it's not just Republicans attacking. It's a lot of Democrats were really disillusioned by Bill Clinton's personal behavior. A lot of Democrats continue to be perplexed by the fact that they're still married, even. She's a polarizing figure within her own party. There are a lot of folks out on the trail. You talk to people who say, you know, I just can't see myself voting for her because I just don't believe her, or I don't like her, or whatever. People are not, you know, they have complex relationships with everyone, but I think the Clintons are just a fascinating family, and they've been in the spotlight for so long that that people have had a time to develop a nuanced view that is more than just the caricature that of Hillary Clinton, certainly, and it's also more than just what Karl Rove would have you believe.
Okay, this is the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC Radio 93.9 and AM 820, and on the web at WNYC.org. I'm Beth Fertig in for Brian, and our guest today is Rick Klein, senior political reporter at ABC News and author of The Note on the ABC website. So let's switch gears a little bit and talk more about the Democratic debate yesterday, specifically one point that kept coming up, which was how to get out of Iraq. Here's John Edwards sort of playing the peacekeeper in the debate.
Any Democratic president will end this war.
George,
that's what we know.
George.
And secondly, the difference. The differences between us, whether it's Senator Clinton or Senator Dodd or Governor Richardson or Senator Biden, all of whom I have enormous respect for, the differences between all of us are very small compared to the differences between us and the Republican candidates, who, the best I can tell, are George Bush on steroids.
Except that there were differences in the candidates' positions, and not just between those who say withdraw now, which includes Dennis Kucinich and former Senator Gravel from Alaska. There's also Governor Richardson and Senator Biden, who had an exchange over the residual troops, the troops that would have to stay if America started to pull out.
Yeah,
Residual troops behind? Maybe if
I leave residual troops behind because you're going to have a minimum of 4,000 civilians there. The military will tell my friend here it takes. No, no, I'm not saying that. You need combat troops, and you'll need them to protect the 5,000 troops that are there.
Okay, so that was Governor Richardson of New Mexico debating with Senator Joseph Biden over whether or not you would need to keep troops in Iraq. Sorry, I should have warned you we were about to hear that clip, Rick Klein. But Senator Biden was pointing out that his proposal for a divided Iraq is gaining traction, meaning that you divide the territory, you keep troops there to keep the different warring parties aside. So who made the most sense in this debate, do you think?
I don't think it's a winner and a loser there. I mean, they have very different ideas for what to do in Iraq. I think it was the most substantive debate we've seen on Iraq policy going forward so far in any of these debates. I do think that most military experts will tell you that what Richardson talks about of getting everyone out within 8 or 9 months really is impossible. And it's sort of built on hypotheticals, because obviously President Bush isn't going to do it anyway. But that's one flaw in his argument. Another is not necessarily a flaw, but it's something to consider, is, you know, do you want to have a peacekeeping force in the country to deal with an imminent terrorist threat, or the possibility of genocide, or just providing some additional security? So that would be a lot less than the number of troops we have now. But some kind of, as Joe Biden talks about, a residual force that can provide some extra help to the Iraqi security forces. Now, Bill Richardson says, no, that's not necessary. Joe Biden says it is. Hillary Clinton says it is. Really, John Edwards and Barack Obama have similar plans. They do envision at least some number of troops, and they don't say how many, remaining in the country for the short and medium term. So
Dennis Kucinich and Mike Gravel are probably at the extreme end then when they say pull out now, right? But they also, they seem to suggest several times that they were feeling ignored during the debate. Here's Congressman Kucinich in response to a question about the power of prayer.
George, I've been standing here for the last 45 minutes praying to God you were going to call on me.
So he was saying that because George Stephanopoulos opened the debate with poll results showing Barack Obama, Hillary Clinton, and John Edwards basically tied for first. Was that a way of justifying why so many of the questions were directed at Obama, Clinton, and Edwards?
Yeah, I will happily defend the way the debate was conducted in that sense, and not necessarily that it's just the polls, but look, there are certain questions that need to be answered for Democratic voters to make up their minds, and a lot of those questions are very much focused on the experience and the electability of the main candidates here. And if the polls showed something different, then certainly the debate would be changed. So it's a bit of a chicken and egg issue. But I frankly think that people like Kucinich, you know, they'd be better served by talking about the substance of the issues rather than complaining about not getting any time. I mean, if Dennis Kucinich were able to show some grassroots appeal in, as demonstrated in polls or in fundraising, then I think he'd get more time at the debate. So,
but by asking the candidates, what do you think of whether Barack Obama is qualified or not, does that really allow a Joe Biden or a Chris Dodd to talk about their positions?
Well, they're the ones that are making the argument. I really think Joe Biden and Chris Dodd particularly who are saying, we're the experienced candidates. Well, tell us why Barack Obama isn't experienced, because this is a crucial question to answer. You're not going to win this thing unless people are convinced that you're more experienced than someone else, if the argument is about experience. I mean, Joe Biden had a big sign outside the debate site at Drake University that said, ears of experience, and it was stacks of corn ears to show how many years of experience he had versus Hillary Clinton or Barack Obama. Well, that's nice and cute, but tell us why that matters. Why should just having 35 years of corn instead of two or three? Why should we care about that? So that is a central question. I think it's an issue that the candidates themselves, Dodd and Biden and Hillary Clinton, have raised about Barack Obama. I think it's legitimate for Democratic voters to consider and legitimate for debate moderators to ask.
Can you give us a little bit more inside perspective as someone who's blogged live about the debate? What was the scene like backstage?
A couple of interesting things. John Edwards decided to enter the building differently than any of the other candidates. All the other candidates came in through the secure entrance around the back. John Edwards made a big show of his campaign bus parking out front and him walking up a footpath with his wife by his side and a trail of supporters and just sort of getting people rallying. It was an incredible amount of energy around the debate site. There were people that started arriving at 3 a.m. on Sunday, hundreds and hundreds of people and dance troops, and Hillary Clinton's folks had rented the marquee of a movie theater to put their sign up, and flatbed trucks circling the area, and demonstrators on both sides. It was really an incredible display of energy, and I think a lot more energy than we saw at the Republican debate that ABC sponsored 2 weeks earlier. I'd also say inside the hall, the Democrats were certainly energized. I do think the hour of the day, though, kind of mutes the enthusiasm and the tone of the candidates and of the crowd. I'd also say, just as an anecdotal thing, I think the Democrats looked looser before the debate started than the Republicans. I remember the Republican debate. There were about 10 or 15 minutes between the last sound checks and the time they went live, and the Republicans sort of stood stiffly behind their podiums, took some notes, and no one really wanted to say anything. The Democrats milled around the room. They chatted with each other. They talked to their wives and their supporters, and generally looked like they were having a better time than the Republicans.
So finally, let me just ask you, this took place in Iowa, this debate yesterday morning. Is Iowa still such a critical state? The people there obviously are very enthusiastic and they love courting the candidates or being courted by the candidates like this, but there's going to be a lot more debates in the next year, and Iowa isn't the only state with an early, caucus in their case, because the whole political calendar has changed. So is it really going to be so important?
There's been a lot of talk about the impact on the changed calendar, and what I've seen so far is that the more things change, the more they stay the same, because all of the attention still is on the early states. And just like it was 4 years ago and 4 years before that and 4 years before that, we're talking about New Hampshire and Iowa, the second tier of states that are very important, of South Carolina, and then some of the other early states we'll see have more impact than they did before. But I think all of the Democrats and Republicans realize that nothing would be a boost to the candidacy than winning the first contest. It means a big shot of momentum to your supporters, to your fundraising ability, and a perception that you can win. And you know, John Kerry showed it 4 years ago when he won in Iowa and never looked back. And I think that lesson, it remains for anyone who wants to be president, either Democrat or Republican. You have to compete in Iowa, and it's the fact that this will be now earlier than ever may mean that it's even more important in
All
some
right.
ways, because if you don't win that, you have less time to recover.
Thanks so much. We'll have to leave it there. This is the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC Radio. I'm Beth Ferdig, sitting in for Brian, who's on vacation, and I've been speaking to Rick Klein, senior political reporter at ABC News and author of The Note on the ABC website. Up next, how to know which cancer screenings are enough.